on the banks of the Grand River, high above the Alora Gorge. This is the Buzzer Podcast. Indie music, new releases, industry insiders, out-of-the-box conversations with guests from the true north, from the west coast to the east coast to across the pond, and from down under. And now, here is Shay.
Hey, y'all. I am Shay. This is the Buzzer Podcast. Welcome and enjoy episode 59, First Music History for July 5th. Today in 2003, Johnny Cash made his last ever live performance when he appeared at the Carter Ranch. Before singing Ring of Fire, Cash read a statement about his late wife that he had written before taking the stage. The spirit of June Carter overshadows me tonight with the love she had for me and the love that I have for her. We connect somewhere between here and heaven. She came down for a short visit, I guess, from heaven to visit with me tonight, to give me courage and inspiration like she always has. Johnny Cash died on September 12th of that year. Jamie Douglas, frontman of Ottawa rock band The Power Goats, is on the show today. The Power Goats emerged on the scene in 2009. In July, they released their fourth studio album, The Power Goats, in 3D. We discuss the album, spin a couple of tracks from it, and find out more about the band. The band's sound is undefinable. It's hard to pin down. You hear retro, blues, folk, rock, and more. Incredible. You're going to love this band. Enjoy the show. Today, we have Jamie Douglas from the Ottawa band, The Power Goats, on the show. Thank you for joining the podcast, Jamie.
Thanks for having me, Shay.
That's great. It's great. You guys have kicked off a lot of noise in Ottawa over time. You're looking at releasing your fourth studio album in October of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're active Ottawa band. Some say you're rock, but others say you're blues, retro rock, hint of folk. I would say you can't define your band.
Oh, thanks. That's I actually appreciate that. For some reason, I don't know, like, the more the music industry shrinks as a whole, the more bands get pegged as like just one genre. And I always found that strange growing up listening to bands like, the Beatles, the Stones, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Grateful Dead, Allman Brothers, David Bowie. Like they're artists first, and their genre just happens to be like whatever song is spinning sort of thing. And yeah, that's just how I look at music, and that's how I write. I just write how I feel, and I've always been that way, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. You're actually good to point out that a lot of the greats, in particular David Bowie, changed their styles remarkably from album to album.
Yes,
remarkably. And I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden it was like genre, and then all of a sudden rock had like, oh my God, what is it, over 300 subgenres?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. You try covering music, all these genres, it's great. So tell us a bit about you and your background.
Well, I was born in Hamilton, Ontario. And Steel City, yeah. I was born there, but I grew up in Ancaster.
Okay.
And lived there from my childhood until my parents split up. And then I ended up living in Freelton, Ontario for about a year and a half before our mom moved us. The parents split up. We were living with my mom. She moved us to her hometown of London, Ontario. So I was then there from grade 8 to the end of high school.
Oh.
And in high school, that's, I think, when I started, you know, I mean, those are your formative years. That's when I, you know, sort of to try to like make an idea of who I was, my identity.
Yeah. Were you part of the London music scene at that time?
Well, I mean, like I was 18 by the time I left London to go to Ottawa. So I hadn't really had many opportunities to do that other than high school shows. There was one bar called Call the Office, which had all age shows on Sundays. And that was pretty much the extent of playing in London, you know, just maybe some coffee house gigs. And we did a couple of campus gigs at Western, like just daytime study gigs where me and my friend and I would just play as a duo. I think that was the first time I played publicly, actually, was on the Western University campus. I was 15 years old and I think we played maybe five songs. So they just like, you know, Wish You Were Here, Ziggy Stardust, whatever I was listening to at the time. So yeah, I always had an outdated sense of taste in music. Growing up in the late 80s and early 90s in London, I was, you know, instead of listening to, you know, like the rock music of the day, I was more backdated, listening to the older stuff, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, David Bowie, a lot of David Bowie. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting into more jam bands like the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers that took me into university. And Neil Young, too, was a big, huge influence, hero to me back then in those days. And then I moved to Ottawa to go to Carleton, which, you know, the greatest 2 years of my life. I didn't quite finish school there, but I had a lot of fun and played, you know, I was starting to play much more regularly, just gigging around town. And I ended up in this blues cover band. We ended up having a residency in the mid 90s at this place called Neon Rock Bar. And uh-huh. We played around, you know, like from Montreal down to Toronto and that whole sort of spread there a lot. And then I took a pause off music in the late 90s. And by about early 2000, I started going back into comedy and acting, which I did in high school and concurrent with playing music. I was, you know, I was always trying to entertain in some way. You know, I was always an artsy guy, you know, like I did voice work, puppeteering, anything like that. I was all about, you know, just getting out there and goofing around and getting paid for it.
So you're an entertainer.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of experience doing that. But I kind of put that aside and went full music around 2008.
Okay.
Yeah. And, by 2000,
why did you do that?
The thing about acting is you have to work with other actors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think I'm, you know, music is more where my heart is, you know.
Okay.
With acting, it was more about, I felt like I was just sort of like doing my own therapy, you know, on myself when I was doing the comedy. I was very dark humored sort of individual. And I think I'd had about enough of that. And I just wanted to play music for real instead of playing music. Because, I mean, I was a comedian who could sing. I was a comedian who wrote songs. That was sort of like the ace of my hand, you know. Oh, music, songs, blah blah blah, there you go.
Yeah.
And but then I was like, then I just decided, no, I actually want to give it a shot. I mean, I tried when I was young. I kind of gave up hope on that around the late 90s too. Like I was like, okay, I'm getting on in age, I'm in my late 20s. And I thought, you know, I was ancient then. But then I, you know, around, so I guess I was probably in my mid 30s when I started doing the whole songwriting thing again, hooking up with people I'd worked with before and just throwing down ideas on record without any intention of, you know, like releasing things, becoming a band. I would just, you know, just sort of experiment. And one of the guys that I was doing that with, his name's David Hart. He was actually quite a bit older than me. I was in the cover band in the 90s with them, and he just sort of rang me up and said, do you want to work on, you know, just some original music ideas that I have? You know, he was a guitar player, but not a lyricist or singer. Mm-hmm. So he said, here's some ideas. You want to finish them up and, you know, we'll just have some fun recording. And I was like, absolutely. So we did. Now this was a Rolling Stones tribute band in the mid 90s and the early 2000s. So okay. We deliberately gave that inflection to this first demo that we recorded, and the band was called Goat's Head Soup.
Goat's Head Soup.
Huh. Yeah. That's a Rolling Stones album from 1973. Yeah, okay, you would know that. Yeah, very underrated album. It also was released the same year. Was also released the same year that I was released into the world. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have a special affection for that album. I still do. But yeah, so all of a sudden, David Hart, he approached me and said, hey, okay. Jamie, now there's this festival in Ottawa called Ottawa Blues Fest. I know you're aware of that, but your listeners might not be aware of it. But it's this big annual festival that happens every year, you know, like the bigger names touring acts come into town with Blues Fest. And they allow quite a bit of local representation, and they always have.
Well, Ottawa's always been great for local music.
Oh, they really are. Ottawa has a music scene unlike any other in the country.
Yeah,
and that's a fact. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. It's bustling here. I'm just a drop in the bucket. You know, the Power Ghost is just one of tons of amazing acts in this town. And Ottawa Blues Fest decided, hey, we're going to have this sort of program called the Ottawa Blues Fest Collective, where, you know, you submit your CD that you create yourself. And if they like it, they'll stick it in this rack that says Ottawa Blues Fest. And in all these record stores, like all the, you know, non-corporate chain record stores in town, I think there are about 12 of them at the time. So David Hart tells me, hey, I submitted, you know, the songs we made on a CD. You know, he didn't have a proper album cover or anything. I was like, oh, my God, why did you do that? You know, we can't be called Goat's Head Soup, you know. He just kind of printed the name on and just sort of sent it out. And so I was like, no. Okay, so we need two things. If we're going to do this, we need a real band name. And we need some kind of logo as well to brand ourselves with. That was the second thing that popped in my head. So the first thing was, okay, we were called Goat's Head Soup. And we recorded the demo at this plastic cabling building in the industrial part of town called Power Core.
Okay.
So we recorded, Goat's Head Soup was recording at Power Core. So I was just, you know, throwing around the names, and I ended up with Power Goats. And the first thing I did was, you know, check online to see if that name was taken by anything anywhere. I couldn't find anything. But then I thought, you know, I want to make sure that our band name is completely searchable. So I put the two words together as one word with a small G. So that, I mean, you know, if you're going to search Power Goats one word, I mean, hopefully the idea was to only have our band name come up. Because this was the digital age of 2008, you know, the world was changing.
And you know, it's actually a horrible thing, but it's the norm for duplication.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And,
which actually is a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah,
when I see it. So you kept to your own unique name.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about the logo?
The logo, well, I thought it had to be goat related, but I didn't want it to be silly either. I wanted it to look cool. So, I mean, I always thought it was neat how bands, like, you know, have their logos, like the Grateful Dead have their, you know, Steal Your Face logo, and the Rolling Stones have the, you know, like the tongue. I thought, you know, and those things look great on t-shirts, right? So I thought, okay, this is my big idea. We'll have it called the Power Goats, and I'll put like this logo on it, and on the front, you know, this goat head. So I sat down and I was just doodling around, you know, I did a little doodling here and there, you know, when I was a kid. So I always like to kind of draw sometimes. So I thought, okay, well, I'll start with Spider-Man's head. And then I gave him two horns, but they're like lightning bolts, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a throwback to like the Steal Your Face logo a bit. But then I added like the ears and the beard, and then two big, you know, like I made the eyes look more alien. And then I thought, okay, it's almost complete. So I thought there was this, you know, all this negative space in the forehead area. Yeah. I thought if I put something there and then change that something after every album. And so I thought, well, you know, I guess this is the first album. So we're going to start with, you know, like I thought, like what's just symbolizes one. So I just put a spade there.
Okay. I see that now. You change it every time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the second one, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do the whole card thing. That can work because I can take a heart, break it in two, right? So that's the second one. That was from, so yeah, so like, I'm sort of skipping ahead of myself. I ended up naming the album Chrome Libido. And okay. it had the goat logo with the, spade in the forehead. And then the second album was Moonlit Crimes. Now these were, and then when I say albums, these are just crude demos that we just recorded ourselves. They're just not radio ready. They're awful, but charming and still, a homemade kind of way. So the third one was The Club. That was from, Bottled Sunset and so on and so on and so on. So now our latest album is in 3D. It's our sixth album. So I have an asterisk. That's like a 6-pointed asterisk.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And so 7 is going to be the next one. We're going to release 6 before worrying about that. But I thought a pot leaf would be pretty.
A what?
A pot leaf.
Well, it'd be Canadian.
Cannabis leaf. Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's sort of how we started. And we ended up getting selected for that, after I resubmitted it with the band name change and the logo change.
Okay, that's so cool.
Yeah, and then I guess the divorce happened, and then I was like, okay, my own personal divorce happened.
Okay.
And then it was, and then I was sort of on my own, and I still had this band thing happening. So I thought, okay, well, actually, let's actually try to, get this band going for real. So we had our first show in 2009, and that's sort of what got the ball rolling to what we have right now today.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So this is your sixth album, but your fourth studio album.
Yeah, it's our fourth. Yes, that's correct. The first two are demos. So yeah, this is our
sixth
release, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Actually, but those first two ones I've buried. They don't exist digitally. They've been wiped pretty thoroughly off.
Even I can't find it.
That's right. No one can. Yeah, they're just just a few boxes in my basement full of them. But I don't know what to do with them.
Yeah. I like the colors of the new one.
Thanks.
The teal and the red and.
Yeah, that's that was just sort of, you suggest 3D glasses.
It honestly, it also has an Aboriginal feel to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does. Huh. Before I listened to your music, everything, I looked at it and went, oh, that's awesome. Right? And also with the teal and the color of red shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, is cool. No, that actually takes me by surprise. That was not my intention at all. But
yeah, if you compare that to the artwork in that color you, done by Canadian Aboriginals, that's definitely the colors.
Huh.
100%. Well, that's amazing.
I chose those colors just for, I was just matching 3D glasses.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. It works.
Yeah, I guess so.
So let's talk about the first track we're going to spin, Ready to Be Written.
Right.
I love the track.
Uh-huh.
It's great.
Thanks so much. Right, I wrote that one last summer. I just had I had one of those fleeting crushes that was just filled my sort of being, this mad crush I had on someone. And so I wrote the song about her, and I thought to myself, as far as putting it together, I was like, I wanted to write and record something that in my mind, like in my own imagination, okay, if I was tasked with if I was given the task of writing a tune for, say, Jim Cuddy or something like that, like what would be something that he would sing? What key would he sing in? So, so I just wrote it in G, capo on the second. So it's sort of an A, and that sort of melody, I kind of role played with that one. I'd be doing a lot with this album where I wasn't doing that before so much. The last one, Blue Canoe, that was completely about personal stuff. But this one was more, I wanted to keep it more lighthearted because the last album was so sad. I wanted to have that, positive feel good energy, and be optimistic, but cautiously optimistic. Like the chorus is saying, I want to be the one who, blah, blah, blah. I want to be with you, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, I'm not really saying that because I'm saying, do I bother addressing this with this person? Do I, bother going down that road again with someone? Cause when you've been burned so many times with love, You know, when you, like, even like, I've had a couple of long-term relationships that I thought were going to, you know, end happily ever after. And of course didn't. But just that feeling when it just overcomes you, and it's kind of terrifying when you get a crush on someone that, like, really rapidly, and you just kind of want to be like, okay, slow down, dude. But it's very difficult. And this song is about the sort of tug of war between, do I tell someone how I feel or do I not tell them how I feel?
Yeah, you actually, rapidly is actually, if you do a play on rapid, that's exactly how you feel when that happens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So did the relationship ever happen?
No. It didn't. No, it did not.
All right.
You know, we're friends, though. That's she loves cool. the song.
That's cool. Well, we're going to spin Ready to be Written.
Right okay, now. Cool.
Can't bleed forever. It either heals or stops in time. But then they say the choice is yours to make now, as if it's all just black or white. I've had my share of hurt and disappointments. I used to drink till I turned blue. I told myself, you gotta make this life better. Is that why I came across you? So do I wait to send you this song? Do I hold my feelings back? Tame the words I break on my bike, downhill on a rainy track. Do I stop myself from a head-on crush that makes me lose my cool? And tell you things I might regret. Have a ton of friends. There's something about your company can't get quite enough of. So here's my heart for you to mend. So do I wait to send you this song? Do I hold my feelings back? Tame the words I break on my bike, downhill on a rainy track. Do I stop myself from a head-on crush that makes me lose? I might regret, like, I wanna be the one who holds you when you need him. I wanna walk with you and kiss you like a baby. I wanna make you laugh so your nose can scrub just like a kid. I think it's time, I must admit, you're a song. Yeah.
that's pretty cool. So she still hung around.
Still friends. She stuck around. She yeah, loves the for song.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, no hard feelings. I mean, it wasn't her fault. But I, you know, just fell for her so hard last year. But maybe the pandemic had something to do with it, because I also did not want to write a sad pandemic song because, oh, my feed was just infested with them, you know?
Hear, hear.
Oh, enough with these sad pandemic songs. Oh, my God. Ugh. I thought, I thought this is not the time to be introspective and navel gazing and writing more sad songs, because I had just released right before the pandemic in 2009, like October 2019, the album Blue Canoe, which yeah. I mean, it's not a very upbeat album at all.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. I like what you've done. Although the next track we're going to listen to too is a bit upbeat, which is fun. I want to hear that story. So when did you pick up your first instrument?
Oh, my grandmother had actually, wait, no, okay, time out, scratch that. My grandmother's second husband had a harmonica that just randomly in his office on his desk. And I remember being little and always just sort of going in there and trying to find this harmonica and then they're just playing it in a corner because I didn't want to get in trouble for, you know, touching Grandpa John's things. So, but the family was aware I was doing this every time I did it, but I was not aware they were aware.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess it was harmonica. I must have been like three or four years old. So it was my favorite thing to just like make noise with this sort of thing. After that, my dad's cousin was moved to Calgary and had this piano, this upright piano that I guess my dad decided, you know, okay, well, we'll look after it while, you know, if you move out there. And they thought, you know, let's give the kids piano lessons. So I have an older brother and older sister. They were all sent to piano lessons. I was too young at the time. I was 5 years old. And, but one time my older sister was babysitting and I just decided I would just sit down by the piano. And I taught myself the theme to Star Wars from memory. And, you know, because I was just tinkering, you know, with the keys and the different notes and how they were sounding in my head. And I was just sort of just piecing it together. Like, okay, well, this makes tunes and this is how I do this. And so I taught myself how to play the theme from Star Wars using two hands. And my family was just sort of like flabbergasted. Oh my goodness. You know, look at this kid. Then they gave me lessons, but I hated piano lessons. Ugh. It was just awful. Like, piano teachers are the worst.
Well, if you learn by ear, which sounds like you do.
I didn't want to be, I wanted to.
You don't
to
want theory.
No, I don't want to be told how to, like, sit up and how to, move, like, hold my fingers like cat paws or whatever. I was really, really turned off by piano lessons. So it wasn't until, guitar didn't happen until I was about, I think 12 years old. I think puberty was just about to sort of kick in, and I was wanting a guitar. You know, I was getting into the Beatles a lot because music of the day in the 80s was, I didn't really care for a lot of pop music. I'd like the older stuff. So I wanted to play guitar like the Beatles. And so my dad got, you know, just one of those budget 3/4 size guitars and an easy Beatle chord book, like how to like make guitar chords.
Yeah.
You know, like for beginners. And so I would kind of tinker away at it. And, you know, I would play chords and it was just kind of there. Like it was, I mean, I didn't really do it a lot. I didn't get obsessed with playing guitar until I was full on like teenager, like 14, 15. And that's when I was like, okay, now I'm okay. Really, you know, I would, you know, so then I was working because it was the mid 80s. And if you were 14 and didn't have a job, you were pretty much socially just done. So, you know, I had a job. So I bought, you know, my first full-size guitar.
Okay.
And that was it. I didn't really look back after that. Piano sort of took a back seat for many years after that. But now I do both. When I play shows, I do both guitar and piano.
Yeah, okay.
And harmonica, obviously.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you just kept it up. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the band is pretty sized. pretty big size.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It started off as a four piece.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're the front man. So I guess you're the vocals and you do the guitar keys. And now I hear harmonica.
Yep.
Yeah. And you also have Andrew Burns on bass, vocals, and keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
Wes Reed on drums.
Yep.
Jeff Logan, lead guitar.
That's right.
Dee Butters, vocals. Scotty Irvin on Kings. Zeke Gross on saxophone, which I heard, I believe, in the Bowling Pin. There's some sax there.
Yeah, he's on. That's
amazing. Yeah. I love that part. Mm-hmm. And Kelly Gregg on trumpet and Eric Johnson on violin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Big band.
It is. Is
that
a
challenge?
Yes, it's a challenge. For organizing rehearsals, it's very difficult sometimes to do that. We haven't really been doing a lot of that since the pandemic, but we do have a city release show coming up in October, so we're going to get back into that full swing with the full band again. I love doing full shows like that with a full band, though. It's just great. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, you have a show.
And they're good players. They're great players. Every single one of them is a treat to perform with.
Yeah, it's an incredible. You're at Live on the Elgin, October 16th.
Live on Elgin, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be our album release. And
okay.
Then we're booked for another show at the Rainbow Bistro December 17th. So that's also in Ottawa. So, so that's how we're not, obviously, we're not touring or anything like that this year, but.
Yeah, that's a good venue, Live at the Elgin.
It is. It's great venue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of my hangout when in my career travels has been Ottawa. I spent a lot of time in Ottawa.
Yeah, it's a great venue, and they're so supportive of the local scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a treat to play there, and the Rainbow too. Those are two of my favorite venues to play. Two of the best stages in Ottawa.
Yeah, it's great that you can showcase your album there. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. It kind of, we were originally going to release the album earlier, but the timing didn't quite work out. Jeff Logan had his second baby.
Okay.
Yeah, recording too was sort of a challenge of the pandemic, but most of it was done through home studios remotely. So, but I mean, yeah, we're more than halfway through recording. So that's good. I'm really excited about the stuff that we already have recorded in the can and the stuff that we're building now as well. I can't wait to unleash this album. I mean, these first two new songs are sort of similar in a way that they're just very light, sort of positive songs. But the stuff that's going to be accompanied with it on the album is, there's a lot more meat and depth to it. But that's by design. So when you hear the full album, you'll understand why it starts with Bowling Pin, which is almost like a throwaway kind of lyric song of silliness, but it's a lot of fun. And that's also the first song on the demo of Chrome Libido. It's a re-recording.
Yeah. Oh, it's a real fun song.
Yeah.
Was it a pickup one night stand?
No, it's about weed, actually.
It's about weed.
Yeah.
Wow, kudos to you. Kudos to you. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it was written years before it was legal too. So it was it was a bit more edgy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go through the lyrics and it's a really cool song. I love it. And
I'm glad.
We're gonna be listening to it shortly. But before we do, I wanted to know, how did you possibly form such a big band?
Well, it happened over time. We've been around we've been playing live since 2009, and we've gone through members, over time. And then we just sort of added, we were playing as a four piece, that was a basic structure, was a four piece, myself plus lead guitar, plus bass, plus drums. Okay. And we still do perform as the Power Goats in that lineup. But when we do the big and more important shows, that's when we sort of bring everyone. But we also have, Scotty Irving on keyboards was sort of added. And Dee Butters is actually Andrew Burns' wife. And her and Scotty and him all played in another band called the Peptides.
Okay.
So they were sort of incorporated. So then it was like more of, I guess, a six piece. And then it wasn't until 2016, we played our third Ottawa Blues Fest show and we were offered, the Texas horns to be part of our set. That was a really cool thing that the festival was doing, saying, you know, here's these, you know, Texas horn trio, and they're mm-hmm. going to be here at the festival and we'll pay them to play with you. Like, you know, so, or wow. any other bands, you know, that, I mean, as long as it fits a schedule. So we were like, yeah. And I didn't even know that Andrew, who's the bass player, he's also the person who produces and mixes our stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I saw his name on the credits.
Oh yeah, for sure. And he also charts horns, so he can write horns. He can write sheet music. So most bands that use the Texas horns, they just kind of went on stage and kind of jammed and, you know, just kind of did a little, you know, just sort of beefed up the sound. But we actually gave them charts, so they were really impressed by that. So yeah, that was after that show with the Texas horns. We were doing our CD. It wasn't our CD release party. We're playing the Black Sheep Inn, another amazing venue in Wakefield, Quebec. That's just 40 minutes outside of Ottawa. And, okay. And now that was kind of a great feather on my cap, playing the Black Sheep Inn. So I thought to myself, well, we have to have horns like we did it at the Blues Fest, you know, the year before.
Isn't that in the Hull area?
No. Well, Hull is now called Gatineau.
Oh, I know, but from
the Black Sheep is far.
I call it Hull still.
Okay, no, the Black Sheep is 40 minutes outside of the city. It's past Chelsea.
Okay,
it's about 40 clicks from my door because I bike there sometimes.
I'm gonna check it out.
Oh, it's so nice. I love what it's right on the Gatineau River. It's just beautiful. Wakefield is such a beautiful little town. And it's artsy and it's quaint and it's vibrant, and it has two live music venues. It's a tiny little town. It's got two amazing live music venues. It's got the Black Sheep Inn and it's got Cafe 1850, which is another amazing place.
Great.
I thought, well, you know, there's our chance to play, you know, the Black Sheep Inn. Like, this is, you know, where Jim Cuddy and Greg Keeler go when they're in town to go just, you know, play. And lots of bands, lots of great local bands I've seen. There's Silver Creek, the Peptides again, Etoile Noir. Like, you know, I mean, these are amazing musicians. They're also friends of ours, but I mean, it's just so great to go up there and it's just hard to describe. You will love it. You will be right up your alley. Anyways, and I'm not being paid by the owner to say any of this. That's when we decided to take on Zeke and Kelly as our horn people. And we basically use them at every sort of all original Power Go show that we do now. So, and then finally, you know, a few years later, Andrew had the idea of putting some violin on the album because a lot of that was, you know, like it had more of a country vibe to it, which is unlike the two before it and unlike the one we're doing now. Just had that vibe. And so he brought in Eric on violin, and it's just fantastic. So Eric's going to be on a couple of songs in the new album too. It's just great having all that talent, all these sounds, you know, like when it comes together, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a challenge, but sometimes it's worth it, right?
Oh, completely worth that. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good to know. So we're gonna listen to Bowl and Pin right now.
She's known well, West Vandana Rosedale. Her dialect changing every hotel. My Swiss dash, lap it to Istanbul. My child. Take us to the road,
For the background of the band, that's really exciting.
Oh, I'm glad.
So I love the song Bowl and Pin, and it's about weed.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Bowl and Pin. It's sort of like a double entendre. You know, like when you smoke a bowl, or you smoke a pinner, you know, it's like a bowl is my pipe. And a pinner is, you know, a roach clip.
You'll probably talk as probably one of the very few people in Canada. I have never tried it. Not
so. What, weed?
Not purposely. No. No.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I've never really. I'm not against it. It's the most wondrous plant. For healing and helping out and a lot of people.
Replacing plastic and paper.
Yeah. And the hemp industry. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very supportive of it. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And as you were saying,
I wouldn't have picked up the monikers. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't have picked up the monikers. I, truth be told, probably for several years, my boys would tell me that what I was smelling was incense, and I believe them.
So, sounds like right out of a Neil Simon play.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was really cool. No, I like the rapper. I'm going to take it for a spin again after the show.
Oh, really?
Now that I know that, it's pretty cool. So we're looking at your album coming out in.
Yeah.
October. And mm-hmm. you're talking about a seventh album. Are you able to talk about that now as one of your seventh future album? Yeah.
I mean, it's going to exist is pretty much all I can say about it right now.
Okay. So yeah. Are there any other future projects that we can look for, or should we focus on the album coming out in October?
Well, I mean, I probably will be doing I have three more songs that are complete and finished. I will be releasing those out as lyric videos, just as I did with the other two.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm going to be doing probably one a month until we release the album in October. Now, probably still keep doing it once a month. It'll just be after the fact sort of thing. I want to have lyric videos for every song on this album. I think they all deserve that individual attention. Releasing an album today is a little different than it was before, you know, the internet made everything worthless, monetarily speaking. So releasing an album at once, like, here's 10 songs, bye, we're done. It's hard to do that now because that's just not the way most people consume music these days.
So
I'm going to be doing lyric videos, you know, basically a monthly schedule for the next 8 months.
Yeah, if you satisfy the Spotify algorithm.
Yeah, and YouTube. Yeah, anything.
Yeah. I'm impressed that you're releasing a full 10-track album.
Yeah, well, that's just me. I'm just like that. I mean, because that's how I consumed my music when I was, you know, when I was young. I still do. No, I think the art of an album is important to me as a songwriter and as an artist. I'm probably going to keep doing that way. I mean, why not? You know, EPs to me, hey, here's half a meal, you know, here's five songs. Here's, you know, five songs. Okay. Great. It just doesn't feel like it doesn't have the same, I'm trying to find the word. Wait.
Well, why do you think artists do that
today?
Yeah.
Oh, because music is worthless monetarily speaking. No one makes money selling, like, releasing albums. Like, it's just the way things have evolved. It has to be singles. I mean, basically what I'm doing is acknowledging the way things have changed, but still waiting until 10 songs are released for a physical copy and saying, here's our album. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
And I plan things that way. So, I mean, I'm trying to do a balance between the two.
And is it going to be a digital release?
Yeah, it's going to be both digital and physical. Now, vinyl won't be able to be a possibility until next year, but I'm going to do a short run of CDs that are going to be ready in October. And we'll have the remainder of the 8 tracks will be available on that date as well. So yeah, it will be, you know, here's our 10 songs. This is our album.
So the CD is out in October, and so we're looking at each month a new release with a lyric video up until then.
Yeah, I've done two like Spotify single releases, and time out. Sorry. I'll start again. We're going to do lyric videos for the rest of the year, but I don't think I'm going to be doing like digital single releases anymore. I've done the two, and I think I'm just going to hold off on the like digital releases for the remainder until October, but I will have the lyric videos being released on YouTube throughout the month. So that's my plan anyways. Just making this up as I go.
That's good. It's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. So stay tuned to youtube.com/thepowergoes.
Okay. And what about, you mentioned vinyl. You're going to tackle that with the next album, maybe?
No, I want to do it. I was thinking actually about doing a compilation album on vinyl only.
Oh. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, originally I was thinking about doing this album that way. In fact, I pretty much planned it and I told the band, yeah, we're going to release vinyl for this album. I still might. I haven't decided yet. I have been pricing vinyl. So I'm sort of just putting that together, and, you know, you have to get it mastered differently as well with vinyl. So, and
100%,
like, like I said, I'm making all this up as I go along. So I do want to release vinyl, whether it's going to be this album or a compilation album, that's still up in the air. But I had planned to do this album like that. In fact, I told the guys, okay, these 5 songs are going to be side A And these five songs are side B, and that's how we've organized things.
Okay.
And I was actually originally thinking of doing, okay, I'm going to do two EPs, and one's called side A and one called side B. And that was my big idea. And then that's that idea, I think I've pitched into the bin. But yeah, so Bowling Pin and Ready to Be Written are basically the two first songs off of side A, and side A is complete.
Okay.
Now we're building side B, so to speak.
Well, I look forward to hearing the rest of the album.
Oh, thanks. I'm so excited for these new songs. Oh,
that's awesome.
Like, just you wait. And I can't wait for you to listen to the 10 songs together that tell a story the same way Blue Canoe does. But not a sad story. This is a different story.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, this one is more about empowerment. Living
but we
alone.
We all need that.
Yeah, it's more about like self empowerment, being confident, and not hanging your, you know, everything on, you know, like having someone else in your life. This is sort of like the resolve to the previous album in a way. Or it's sort of like a sequel, I guess, to Blue Canoe. One song is actually a direct sequel to Blue Canoe. There's a song on Blue Canoe called Bat Lake. It's the only fictional song on the album. I just wrote like a murder ballad, you know, like a classic Nick Cave kind of thing. Okay. And there's this new song on the In3D album. It's called Halloween Love, Bat Lake Part 2. And it's a sequel to Bat Lake, so it's going to be neat how those sort of tie together, and I'm excited about that. And of course, that's going to be the single, since our CD release is going to be in October. That's going to be like the single and full video that we're going to be doing. So I'm really excited for that song. It's so much. It's funny because Bat Lake is this dark, you know, mysterious, chilling kind of tune, and Halloween Love is an out and out balls out rocker.
Oh wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm. But it does continue the same story of, you know, the female protagonist.
Yeah.
From Bat Lake.
You and girls, eh?
Hey, you know, we're all people, right?
Yeah, but you need to come back on the show and tell us about that when they're set to release.
That's not a bad idea. I'd love to do that.
So where do you hang out best on social media? I see that your website is wow, professional. Up to date.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I do that. I built it with Wix.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so it's cool. I like it. I design these things for a living.
No way.
Yeah, I do.
This is the only website I've ever really built.
Yeah, you've done a pretty good job.
Thank you.
And so I was impressed.
Thank you very much.
So is that the best place to find everything about the Power Goats, or are you more active on Facebook? Or
yeah, well, those are two different things. If you want to find out about the Power Goats, definitely go to thepowergoats.com. It's got tons of video, tons of like all of our current music is there. Our four studio albums, not the first two, but you know, and all the news is there. So anything that kind of comes along. In fact, this podcast, the latest news story is the fact that I'm going to be on your show.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm old fashioned that way. I'm all about websites.
And that was pretty cool. Albums. Oh, that's my logo. Oh, that's about me. Oh, wow.
Yeah, surprise.
And the best social media is?
For me, it's Facebook. I'm on Facebook far more than Instagram or Twitter. I do have accounts though there. And I mean, I'm notified for any of them, but if you just kind of want to bump into me and communicate with me, Facebook is more than likely your best option.
So Power Goats on Facebook.
The Power Goats.
The Power Goats on Facebook.
Yeah. Power Goats. Yeah. So if you're listening, it's Power Goats. It's one word, small g.
On Facebook. Yeah, pretty cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts, your music, and everything else.
Well, thanks for having me, Shay.
Great to know you.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
Thank you. I have to make it fun, don't I? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could make it miserable, but I mean.
But
you don't. But you do not do that.
No, it was a lot of fun.
It sure was.
And I look forward to having you back.
Thank you so much, Shay.
Hey, have a great night.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please share this episode with others and post about it on social media. To catch all the latest from The Buzzer and upcoming shows, you can follow us on Instagram at The Buzzroll Media and on Twitter at The Buzzer Indie. Catch you at the pod next episode, On Air Indie, from iPad to yours over the airways. Subscribe feeds at thebuzzerpod.com. Cheers.